And the morning is the opportunity to give a talk about meditation. So it just can set the scene for the day. So you have something inspiring, some guidance which you can use for the rest of the day. And from tomorrow, this is the first day, we don't have interviews. And from Sunday, every morning and afternoon, in the morning, from the time of the talk finishes, maybe about 9 o'clock till about 10:20, we'll have the opportunity for personal interviews. So 10 minutes each. But please don't use the interview time for questions about your marriage or your family or about life. It's not like counseling sessions, it's about meditation. So please, you can ask any question you like about meditation during that interview time. And that's also in the afternoon between 3 and 4:30. So it gives you the opportunity to ask personal questions. But, you know, having been a meditation teacher for a long time now, sometimes the personal questions you ask are all the same. So it is advisable to put those questions down on a piece of paper. When you put them on a piece of paper, then everyone can answer them. Sorry, I can answer them, and it'd be for everybody. Everybody can listen to the same question. And that means that it saves me a lot of time, and it's also, it shares the opportunity for other people to hear a good answer to the questions which you all share. And because when I first started having these interviews, people will come up and they say this problem, and then the next person will come in and they'll ask the same problem, and then the next one. You all think that your problems are just special to you, but you actually do share them with everybody else. So if you can, I'll put them on a piece of paper and ask them in the evening. That is the very best way. And in these morning talks, again, we're talking about the meditation and just the general rules for this retreat. Please try and keep quiet. So don't have conversations with each other. That's why we have the chanting in the morning and in the evening, just so you can exercise your vocal cords by doing the chanting. And you don't need to exercise them during the day by talking to each other. Because you will find that if you can keep that silence, you don't speak to each other, you find the mind doesn't speak to you. In other words, you don't have all these thoughts running through your mind. If you can stop the external voice, it's much easier to stop the internal one as well. Now, of course, that's very difficult because many of you are so used to talking to each other. And at first you can feel quite antisocial by just passing each other and not saying anything at all. But you'll find after a few days you get so used to this, it's actually a lovely way of living with other people. But when I say you don't need to talk to each other, you can always smile. Because some people can get so depressed and they look at all these zombies in this retreat, not talking to each other, walking very slowly, doing everything very slowly, just like zombies. And it can be very depressing. So instead of doing zombie meditation, that's what we're joking. There was a Vipassana retreat here recently and all the people were walking very, very slowly. Very mindfully, but very slowly. And people said, Ajahn Brahm, there's a zombie invasion of Jhanagrodha. So you can smile. And sometimes that's all you need to do when you meet each other on the path, to smile. And that is sometimes more beautiful and more meaningful than all these words we can say. Just our body languages. It welcomes each other, respects each other, and embraces each other in silence rather than in words. So it's okay to smile at each other in your cottage or in the past or whatever. There's no need to actually to speak. But not speaking is not like this rule, and if you say one word, you get thrown out. Now, please don't look at these rules as something which is oppressive. Now, this is not Guantanamo Bay, this is Jhana Grove. So if you do need to say something to each other, then just say it. And just say it and have it over and done with, but don't start a conversation. And you just say, oh, you know, the honey's over there. So you don't need to sort of say, the honey's over there. But, you know, there's very good honey here, but the honey we had last year was much better. And I really don't like this. So don't start conversations on. Because if you do, that's what happens in your mind. Once you have a thought, it carries on with the train of thought. So, yes, speech is okay, just in moderation, but just very simple. And speech which stops more speech, not speech which continues on more speech. And then you find the mind becomes quiet also. And I used to do this little, I don't really do it much these days, this little exercise, because sometimes the actions speak louder than words. The practical exercises mean much more to people than all these talks. I used to, on the last day of the retreat, after breakfast, say, okay, everyone can talk now, after 8 days of being quiet. You can talk to each other now. And no one did. When they could speak, they didn't want to speak because they enjoyed the silence so much and they realized they didn't need to speak. That was such a beautiful experience when people weren't keeping quiet because of some rule or, you know, because they had to. They were keeping quiet because they liked to. It was a much more pleasant way of living together. But anyway, you should really experience that. The general rule is this. If you cannot improve upon the silence, then be quiet. Don't disturb it. There's a wonderful little saying. If you can improve upon the silence, then say something. You know, there's sometimes, actually it's so nice we had some rain yesterday. This time of the year, we sometimes have bushfires. And so, sometimes on a silent retreat, I'm not allowed to speak. Run! Don't be stupid like that. Say fire! Get out of here! So, this is noble silence, not stupid silence we're doing. So it's okay to speak it. Now, if you see there's a snake coming in. Usually no snakes when it's cold like this. Or something's happening, you can tell each other, but keep it quiet. If you can improve upon the silence, speak. If not, keep quiet. Now, even though we say that most people are very good, there's always one or two people who just find it very difficult not to talk. And that's usually the one staying in your cottage. So what do you do when there's someone who goes, yak, 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 yak? What you do is, if you say, you know, be quiet, I don't want to speak, that seems very, very nasty and antisocial. So instead, all you need to do is to give them the one finger sign. Now, I don't mean the usual one finger sign. I just mean put the one finger in front of your lips. That's the one finger sign of a Buddhist retreat. And it's the only one finger sign you're allowed. Just... Because what that is, it's reminding a person that you want to be quiet. And that is quite allowable, so if someone's talking to you, don't go and say to them, oh, you know, we're supposed to keep quiet. And then they say, why should we keep quiet? There's no reason to keep quiet. Is it because of any inner conversation already? So just quickly, shh. And that's a very beautiful, wonderful way of reminding each other, you want to be quiet. If they want to go and speak to someone, they can go and speak to someone else. There's lots of kangaroos in this place. Go and find a kangaroo to talk to, or whatever. But it means you are caring for other people's quietness, so they too can be peaceful and still. So this is what we're trying to do, to try and encourage that quietness in the external. And once you can have the external nice and quiet, it's much easier to keep quiet inside as well. And number two, if this is your first time at this retreat center, especially many of you have come from Asian countries and you've been on other retreats, sometimes people can't believe, wow, this is so comfortable here. You've got your own ensuite. You've got your own comfy bed. You don't have to sleep on a mat on the floor with other people always snoring. You don't have these bells which are going to go off early in the morning at 4 o'clock and people come and get you out of bed to bring you into the meditation hall. You don't have these 50 minutes you have to meditate on the floor on the cushion and then another 10 minutes having to walk meditation. You find the schedule is very loose. and the place is very comfortable. And there's a reason for that. When you have a comfortable place to sleep at night, that's one of the best ways of overcoming one of the biggest hindrances in meditation, sloth and torpor. A lot of times people get sleepy in meditation because they're tired. Such a simple answer to a question which does bother many people. So you have lovely beds and your own room, which you can go and escape into any time of the day or the night. Even during my talks, it's all recorded, so if you miss it, you can always catch up on it later on. Now you know, for many people, straight away that takes away so much stress out of their body, which is one of the causes for not having any peace in the mind. You have to get peace of body first of all, and then peace of mind. Or what the Buddha called tranquility of body first of all, kaya prasadi, and after that you get tranquility of the mind, citta prasadi. So in order to get tranquility of your body, please, as I mention every time in my first talk when I sit here, catch up on your sleep in the first couple of days. Especially those of you who've come from the other side of the world, or even the other side of the world being Sydney or Melbourne, and you're tired, please take a rest. And I mention this because so often many people come on a retreat and they put so much effort and energy into trying to make the best use of this time, they get so tense they never get anywhere. And the classic story, which I repeat, the best experience which makes this point came from many years ago when I taught a meditation retreat in Sydney. And a person came late on a Friday night. I was always already in bed when they arrived, and they arrived about 11, 12 o'clock at night. Because they were one of these busy executives who, in order to take a week off and do a meditation retreat, had to stay in her office until the late hours of the evening just to put everything together so she could leave for a few days. She's one of those very busy executive women. And so when she came for my first interview on this Saturday morning, and she told me that, you know, she missed the evening before because she'd arrived late because she was very busy, I told her the first two or three days, please sleep a lot. And she was a smart enough woman to understand exactly what I meant and follow it. So after the interview, she went to bed. She got up for lunch. And after lunch, she went to bed again. And she slept most of the first two or three days. And she told me in her interviews that she had to share accommodation with other people. And the other girls in her room were looking at her with, now she thought it was anger. And I said, it's not anger, it's with jealousy. They wish they had the guts to do what you're doing. Because they thought she wasn't practicing. They thought that she was wasting time, that she was just coming to a meditation retreat and sleeping all the time. What use is that? That's what they were thinking. But underneath they were thinking, yeah, I'd like to do that as well. And after two or three days, she had caught up on her sleep. And which meant that she didn't want to sleep so late. She used to start getting up early and just to meditate in the hall, but her body was really relaxed. It got rid of the tiredness and sleepiness, which in psychology we call sleep deficit. And after those few days of resting, she soon caught up with everybody else. Her meditation was obviously after 3 days, just at the beginning. After 6 days, she was now up there with everybody else. And I tell this story because after 9 days, she had some great meditation experiences. You know, she had surpassed the others. And I say that to her, and I say that to you, that she was wise. She looked after her body, first of all, to give it this peace of body, so the body wasn't harming or hurting her anymore. In exactly the same way, I've been telling the monks recently, because it's been some hot weather last week, and I still think that one day, probably soon, maybe this year, to install some air conditioning in our meditation hall of Bodhiyana. And people say, isn't that a bit too indulgent? You're supposed to be monks. You're supposed to be tough. Having an air conditioning, that's for namby-pamby cream puffs. Real monks, we just sit there and sweat. When it's cold, we just freeze. It's only our body. We're not attached. Yes, but. And the but comes from, again, a personal experience, that when I was meditating in Thailand, in the northeast of Thailand, when there wasn't even electricity, let alone air conditioning, it was so hot and humid in the early mornings. We'd get up at 3 o'clock and we'd sit there, and there was no fans, and it was just so, it's in the jungle, so humid and hot. And I had a lot of trouble, like many other Westerners, with sloth and torpor. Now you start nodding in the morning. And I went to do my visa in Bangkok. We all had to go once a year, now not the same days, to do your visa. And that we were allowed to stay this one year in this monastery, the very wealthy monastery, Wat Bawon, where the head monk of Thailand lived. So it was a very wealthy and rich monastery. And they had a new building for visitors, and there was one room in there which was had an aircon. And one of the monks managed to get the key from the monk who was looking after this building. So every morning at 3:15, we'd go in there to meditate. And every morning, not just me, all the other monks, we had no sleepiness at all. And it was just so wonderful to meditate in a cool room, you know, with the humidity just taken out. My meditation was so wonderful there. And I realized the only reason I had that sleepiness was because my body was being oppressed. It couldn't handle the heat. And it's experiences like that which tell me, please look after your body. Even in the meditation manual, the Visuddhimagga, the teacher there, Buddhaghosa, he says, look, if you need some heat in your room to make you meditate better, please use it. Have a little fire, or to cool off, if that assist your meditation, please do so. So this is not like the ascetic tradition where you think, I have to have pain before I can get enlightened. I have to push through difficulties. No, do not use your willpower. Use wisdom power. Be smart. So I cannot control, you know, the weather outside. But certainly in your rooms there are heaters, there are blankets. The rooms are usually pretty cool if it's a hot day. So the rooms can be a nice little cave for you. If it's too warm in here or too cold in here, your rooms are wonderful places for you to meditate, your own little cave. So don't think that you have to come in this place to meditate. You can meditate in your rooms, and there you can adjust the temperature. You can, you know, if it's really hot day, you can take all your clothes off. I don't care. No one's looking at you. And if it's a cold day, you can turn on the heaters. You can borrow a heater from someone else. Have two heaters in your room. Have all the blankets on. There's plenty of blankets here. A duvet as well. And just to make yourselves comfortable. And I stress that point because in too many meditation retreats, physical comfort is not emphasized, which means that they don't get the deep meditations. And it's not just the temperature, you know, have enough to eat, enough to drink, especially in the hot weather. And when you are meditating, you don't have to sit on the floor, on these cushions. These are what the chairs are here for. And you can see the way these chairs have been designed. We had to specify the length of the legs because some of the chairs are just too high for people and some are just too low. Here, if they are a little bit high for you, you put little cushions on the ground so you can rest your feet on the cushions so the chairs are comfortable for you. For those people who start swaying in the meditation, we've got these armrests to stop you falling off. And if, you know, you do get very sleepy and always nod forward, we have seat belts to make sure you don't fall afterwards. We can tie you on. But the point is to try and make it as comfortable as possible for you, so that you don't need to be afraid of physical pain when you meditate. In some meditation retreats I used to do, as before I became a monk, sometimes it was just so much endurance by the end of the day, your back was aching, your knees were aching, everything was aching. And somehow or other I thought, yes, I was getting something out of this. And you're not getting anything out of that at all. You maybe endure pain, but that's not the way to become in deep meditation. So make your body comfortable. And we don't have a schedule, which means that you can get up at any time, you can go to bed at any time. Keep it natural. And hopefully if you practice like that, you will find that towards the end of the retreat, you just want to get up early. You know, you just want to get up early, you just wake up early. And I've rested, I've had enough rest. You just go up and meditate, walk meditation, sit meditation, either here or in your room, or just out on the stupas or anywhere in this compound here. And which means that the meditation becomes just so natural. And people are surprised sometimes. Sometimes people end up by the end of the 9 days, they don't want to go to sleep. And they meditate all night, and it's totally natural, it's not forced at all. And said, no, I didn't want to go to sleep. Why? It's because you're not tired. You know, all that tiredness, and the reason why we sleep a lot is because we use our body and our brain too much. And on this retreat, you know, you're not doing much physical work. You know, most of the physical work is with your arm, with a spoon, putting things into your mouth. And just walking backwards and forwards from your cottage, which is not very far. And especially if you're not using your brain by thinking and worrying so much, you find your brain doesn't need the rest of sleep. It's just so natural, you just don't want to sleep much. So a lot of you will find by the end of the retreat, maybe 3 or 4 hours or 5 hours, that's all you need. And if that's the case, just wake up and just meditate, sit comfortably, and just make the mind peaceful, or do some walking meditation. And that means that you can spend a lot of time meditating. When we first came here and started teaching meditation, now we tried this, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning we started off. We didn't tire them, we would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, the bell would go. But we thought, oh, this is the West, let's be kind to everybody, 4 o'clock in the morning. And then many people complain, oh, 4 o'clock in the morning. So we made it 5 o'clock in the morning. So you can see on the, is it 5 o'clock or 4:30? I haven't looked at the schedule for a long time now. So it doesn't really matter getting up at which particular time. We used to do that, and then this is when you meditate. And what happened then? When it got to 9 o'clock, you know, that's when the evening session was finished. You can carry on meditating if you wished, but then everybody would rush back to their rooms to lie down, to go to sleep, because they had to get up at 5 o'clock. They were afraid. And when we stopped all schedules, we just let people be natural. I found that people were getting up at 4 o'clock and 3 o'clock. I'd sometimes come here early, and there'd always be somebody meditating here before me. And sometimes we'd meditate till 10 or 11 o'clock, and there'd always be someone left in here. I'd never be the last person to leave the room. In other words, people were doing far more meditation when there wasn't any schedule. And when I saw that, I realized, yes, when it's natural, the meditation just takes off. You want to meditate, it's not forced, and that way you do much more. So that's why there isn't a fixed schedule. The only schedule we have here is the morning talk, and I told you, you don't need to go to that. There is the breakfast at 6:45, and you don't need to go to that either, that's optional. But everybody goes to that. And the lunch at 11 o'clock. That's the only times you have to really remember. And don't worry about time by having wristwatches or clocks. Now, there's no clock in here except my one over here to make sure that I don't talk too long. But you'll find you don't need to worry about looking at your clock in the morning, what time you get up. Just get up naturally. And don't ever think that you will sleep through breakfast. That has never happened, not once, in this retreat over 5 years, or however long it's been going on. Everybody always wakes up before breakfast time. And don't have to worry, you know, is it lunchtime yet? You'll know, your tummy will tell you when it's lunchtime. So you don't need a really much of a wristwatch. Because it's a natural thing which will tell you when it's the time to eat. And I like to keep it natural this way, especially for your sleeping hours. Don't look at the clock and say, oh, it's about time I'll go to bed now. And don't think, oh, this is the time I should get up. Don't look at the clock to tell you. You know, look at your body to tell you when it needs to go to sleep. Look at your body when it needs to wake up. If you look at your body rather than this artificial watch which you have, you'll find you'll sleep much better, that you will be much more relaxed, and you'll be much healthier with more energy. It's a very, very simple thing. And again, as I mentioned, when you do come and meditate in this room, please make use of the chairs, the cushions. If there's not enough cushions, there's many more which we can find for you. The purpose is to at least make your body comfortable when you start meditating. You've slept enough, you've eaten enough, now's the time to actually to sit down and keep the body still as much as you possibly can. Now, which means that the first part of the meditation should be awareness of your own body. And it's amazing just how unaware many people are of their own body. An example of that, when I went to Thailand as a monk almost 40 years ago, you know, we didn't have many sandals, and a lot of the time we just walk around the forest barefoot. And we were always, not the Thai monks, but the Western monks, were always stubbing our toes on little rocks or on shoots. And Ajahn Chah noticed all these Western monks all with band-aids over their toes. And he asked, what on earth is going on? And now when we tell, oh, we keep walking through the forest or on arms around, we tread on this or we stub our toe on that. And that's what Ajahn Chah told us, you Westerners have got stupid feet. I never thought that feet could be stupid. But he was actually saying, you know, your feet are stupid. And he was so accurate because our heads were very smart, because all our attention was up here. And the furthest part of our body from our head, you know, our toes, we weren't really aware of those at all. And so it became a great practice of body awareness, to actually simply be aware of where I was walking and to make sure that I never trod on anything or stubbed my toes. And after a while, my feet became smart and didn't need any band-aids anymore. It was simple awareness of our body. And it's amazing just how many people, that they're not aware of parts of their body which are distant from you. So when we learn how to be aware of, say, our knees and our legs, our bottom, even maybe our back, you find that you can adjust your body so it relaxes and becomes very, very comfortable. Now, if you've got an ache in your body right now because you've been sitting down here for almost half an hour, then please see if you can move and adjust and make it more comfortable. And sometimes you can ask, well, why is it so uncomfortable? Because you weren't careful when you first sat down. A lot of times we think, no, we should sit like this. This is the best way to meditate. Look at the Buddha. He's in full lotus there. That's the only way to get enlightened. If you sit in full lotus, all the energies of the body, the chi and the winds are all going to go in the right direction. Now, that does not work. And to say this, sometimes, you know, people think, oh no, the only way to get enlightened is to be in full lotus, you know, with the right hand mudra in a particular way. And that's actually not true. Because, you know, you have to say some personal stories. I always thought that you have to sit in full lotus with a straight back in one particular position to get any deep meditation. But there was one time when I had typhus fever in Ubon Hospital Monk's Ward, which I wouldn't recommend for anybody in those days. It was a really scary place. The backwater of a third world country where, you know, monks were supposed to be tough. So I had typhus fever. After about 3 weeks of having typhus fever, you know, felt no energy at all. Really, really painful, tired. And you feel like quite depressed. It's natural, physical. And I remember just one day, I felt so depressed and ill for 3 weeks, nothing was working. And I decided, come on, you're a monk, meditate. So I decided just to try meditation. And, you know, it got to that sweet spot of meditation where your body vanishes. And I was really blissing out. But the point was, after I finished my meditation, it was so wonderful, just having a lot of bliss in your mind, and the body had just totally vanished for half an hour or an hour, I don't remember how long. And they're coming out afterwards, and what I noticed was my posture, my position, which I just got into a very deep meditation. I've never seen that posture described in any book on meditation. It wasn't even crossing your legs. It was, you know what it's like when you're in bed? You know, just one leg this way, one leg that way, and I'm all over the place. And it was a really weird posture. But then I just had a very nice meditation, and from that time on I realized that posture is not important. Your comfort is important, but not the posture. So don't think that you have to be cross-legged on broken glass, perfectly straight back, even though it hurts like hell, and then I'll get enlightened. No way. So at the beginning of the meditation, be mindful of your body and add this wonderful extra ingredient called kindness. Sometimes I can't, some monks, well I shouldn't say this, some Buddhists are absolutely stupid. You know, don't you ever read what the Buddha actually taught? Don't you ever have an idea of the great compassion and kindness of a Buddha? The Buddha wasn't some control freak. He wasn't like this guard again in a concentration camp. He was incredibly kind and compassionate. So that's how you should look at your body. Look at your body with the kindness of a Buddha mind. So when you look at it with kindness, you see your legs. No, my poor leg, it needs to be adjusted. So adjust it, for goodness sake. You know, I need to blow my nose. Blow it. You need to cough. Please cough. Now it's really important, just on the subject of coughing. I have to say this on every meditation retreat at the very beginning. Because sometimes when people are meditating, they burst out coughing so loudly, and they usually run out coughing all the way. By that time, before they get to the door, they've disturbed everybody. And you know why? It's because they thought, it's what we call in meditation, the volcano effect. They want to cough, and only a small cough, but they think, no, if I cough now, I will disturb everybody. So they plug it up, and they resist it. And the longer they resist it, just like the pressure building up in a volcano, the pressure builds up inside, oh, I can't cough. When it does blow, it makes a huge noise. Apparently when Krakatoa blew in Java, they could hear it in Darwin. And that's just like when you start coughing really loudly. They can hear it over in Bodhinyana Monastery and in Karna Prison far down the road. And just like with a volcano, it spews all this really ash and lava all over the place. And that's what you do as well, over all the people sitting close to you. All this disgusting stuff when you cough really loud. So instead of having the volcano effect, if you need to cough, just cough. Do it quickly. And then you avoid the volcano effect. No, so you're being kind to yourself. You need to cough. And you'll find if you're that kind to yourself, if you're not going with fear, everything relaxes. You find you don't need to cough when you can cough. And you don't need to sneeze when you're allowed to sneeze. And you can adjust your body to be nice and comfortable. So we start the meditation with a combination of mindfulness and kindness on our own body to try and make it comfortable as possible. Now this is not a small thing, but it's a huge boost to your meditation, because it's not just learning how to relax your body so your body is at ease and comfortable for the rest of the meditation. It's also learning these two major powers of meditation, the thing which takes you into the deepest stages of meditation, the awareness together with the kindness. Those two together, incredibly powerful. And, again, one of the great stories of how this can work healing your own body. The power of these two combined is amazing. And I think it was about 3 years now, or 2 years ago, 2.5 years I think now, when I had some food poisoning. Now, Dr. Liz, you know just food poisoning, just how it really sort of creates all these spasms in your gut. It's incredibly painful. And I think that was the last time I actually fasted for the last 4 or 5 years. I'm not allowed to fast anymore because many people come to this monastery and they want to put food in my tummy. And if I'm not there and refuse, they get very disappointed. So this was the only, I said, look, I cannot eat your food, even though you brought me something special. I just cannot put it in my tummy. I'm so sick. And of course, going through those spasms, you know, as a monk, you think, what should I do? And just like I teach other people, sometimes when you're a teacher, it's so easy to tell other people what to do, and you forget to do it yourself. But I do teach myself, and I say, what would I tell other people to do? I say, like, be mindful and be kind. And that started this wonderful little process of being in absolute agony and then just being aware of that pain, being mindful of it, which means, you know, not running away from it, not trying to get rid of it, but just being with it and being as fully aware as I possibly can. And then, most importantly, being kind to it. It was the kindness which relaxed some of those spasms and pain. You always notice that kindness relaxes. If you are in a room with a very, very kind, compassionate person, you relax. You don't feel so afraid and tense and tight and stiff. But if you come into a room where there's some monster, you know, the boss from hell, or your parent you're really afraid of, or this monk with his terrible reputation, and being strict, like me. Don't you feel that tightness straight away, that tension? This is why kindness relaxes people. And kindness will relax you. So when I was kind to my guts, the guts actually relaxed. And the thing with awareness, it gives you feedback. You can actually see the feeling changing. So my feeling in my gut got less painful. Don't carry on being kind. More kindness, more kindness. The mindfulness gave me feedback. I could see what was happening, whether I was going in the direction of relaxation or the direction of more pain. And it only took 20 minutes. That's all it took for the pain to totally vanish. After 20 minutes, you couldn't believe it. It was just gone. No, nothing there at all. And that was weird, especially to have real, no proper food poisoning pain, and 20 minutes later, no medication, just a combination of mindfulness and kindness, relaxed everything totally away. And there's no problem anymore. Never came back. And to this day, I sometimes wonder what on earth had happened, physiologically. Because food poisoning means there's some bacteria in your guts messing around. And I had this vision afterwards, maybe imagination. I had this vision afterwards of all these little bacteria in my gut after the 20 minutes were sitting there with all their, what's it called, their flagella, all crossed, sitting down in meditation. All these bacteria. And because all of my bacteria were meditating calmly and peacefully, they weren't irritating my gut anymore. I don't know what they were doing, but certainly there's no more pain. And that just taught me the power, or rather retaught me the power of mindfulness and kindness to relax your own body. And I'm sure that during this retreat you're going to have some pains or aches, either stomach ache or a hay fever in your nose. If you get hay fever, it's hay fever season here, or maybe a cold or a headache, or all these other aches which we get. It's a great opportunity. If you have any pain or aches, try that, mindfulness and kindness, together, and see if you can just be so kind. The mindfulness gives you the feedback to see if you're going in the correct direction, and see if you can use those things to take away all the stress of the body which causes that pain in the first place. And it works. And of course, you do that at the beginning of the meditation. There must be some place which is aching, which is stiff. Use the mindfulness and kindness to relax your body so much you can sit for hours. I don't know how long that you can sit still to meditate, but you find people who spend that extra minute just relaxing their body at the beginning can sit for maybe 20, 30 minutes longer than others. It's because you prepared the body. Remember, if you've got a little bit of ache, a little bit of tightness, putting your body in a bad position to begin with, of course after half an hour, that little irritation is going to build up and cause you a lot of pain. Which is why the preparation at the beginning is one of the keys to sitting meditation for long periods of time. And there's another little thing, that when you can sit meditation for long periods of time comfortably, there's more chance of getting deeper and deeper and deeper. So this is actually how we can start our meditation, by looking after our body, which means that once your body is relaxed, you can let it go. Bye-bye, body. And you can start to focus on relaxing the mental world, which is the second part of the meditation. You can't relax the mental world if your body is still causing you trouble. So look after your body first of all. Just like the Buddha before he became enlightened, had a good bath, rested, ate a good meal, and then he sat under the Bodhi tree. He didn't sit under the Bodhi tree without looking after his body first of all. So look after your body, good rest, good food, nice and relaxed, and then you find the meditation is very easy. And again, if you do get sleepy, then it means you're tired. Go to bed. You need some more sleep. And after a while you sit there, the body's really relaxed, you don't feel very sleepy. So now you've got to learn how to relax the mind. And the biggest problems with the mind is thinking, and the biggest part of thinking is thinking about the past and the future. I don't know where you've come from. I don't care what has happened to you. I don't know if you've been traumatized, or if you've just been working hard, both means the same really, or if you've been married, or whatever is happening. You know, just if you've got all this pain and negativity from the past, don't try and deal with it by thinking about it and working it all out. And what should I do later on because this is what happened in the past? No. The past is a prison whose cell door is open and you can walk out any time you like. So don't think you're imprisoned by the past. You choose to go thinking about the past. And that's one of the reasons why you cannot enjoy the peace of the present moment. You cannot be peaceful in the past. You cannot get wisdom from thinking about the past. People think you learn from the past. You do not learn from the past. You learn from the present. The past is just a waste of time. So please remember that, all the things which happened to you, who did what to whom and why they did. I don't know, you can't judge any. I can't say who's guilty and not guilty, just all you can do is let it go. Why do you want to burden yourself with that? So please, in meditation, anything to do with the past is verboten. No, red sign, don't go there. It's a waste of time. You are just giving up too much opportunity to find peace in life. Don't think you have to fix up the past before you can look at the present moment. You will never be able to fix up the past. Because the past is gone, it's done, finished. So please, Another quote in Ping Pong's book. Thinking about the past is like carrying coffins of dead moments on top of your head. That gives you headache. These are coffins, these are dead moments, that's why it's called the past. So just bury them, cremate them, get rid of them. I don't care what you do with them, but don't put them on your head and remember them. Let them all go. So if ever you see the past coming up in meditation, not now, throw it away. And the other thing people worry about is the future. People are so anxious and worried about what might happen. Look, you have nothing to worry about over the next 8 days. I guarantee that lunch will be there for you at 11 o'clock. You don't have to worry about it. Is there going to be lunch today? You don't even have to worry about what you're going to eat. You've got no choice. It's just there. You don't have to worry about what should I cook today. That's somebody else's problem. You don't have to worry about breakfast. It's there. You've got nothing to worry about at all in this retreat. You know, that's for some people, that's just really so disturbing. That's why they have to get out on their mobile phones and find something to worry about. What's going on in Thailand with the demonstrations? What's going on at home? What's my husband up to when I'm out here? It doesn't matter. Let him do what he wants to do, as long as you don't know about it. So don't need to worry about anything. And that is one of the reasons why that this place is very hard to get a signal on your mobile phone. Isn't that wonderful? There are actually places where you can get a signal, but if you know it, don't tell anybody. Because the whole idea is learning how to let go of the world for 8 days. And I guarantee the world won't sort of get into more trouble than it is already because you are not answering your emails. You are not that important. So don't think, oh, I've got to answer my emails to find out what's happening. No, you're not. The world goes on just as it always does without you. And isn't it wonderful? You can let it totally go. This is called a retreat. That's what a retreat means. You leave the world for a few days. You let it go. You don't worry about anything. And I just let all these politicians do all that sort of stuff. That's why we elect and pay them for. And so we don't have to worry about that. So this means you can be free of all the future. And for those of you who have health problems, or problems in your life, or difficulty, whatever it is, you should realize by now this great saying that now is the time your future is being made. This moment is the only place you can do anything about your future and other people's future. Right now. When you understand that, I like repeating it just to get it in your head. People think, oh no, if I want to make sure there's a good future, I've got to think about the future. That's why it always goes wrong. Think about the present moment, the place the future is being made. And what do you want for your future? Good health, happiness, peace? Where do you think peace is made? Where do you think happiness is made? Where do you think health is made? It's right here. So when you keep thinking like this, that now is the time my future is being made, that this is where my meditation is going to really take off, right now, then you put all your focus on this present moment. And when you learn how to be in the present moment, it's like this big burden has just fallen away from you. Just all the reasons, just why I have to keep thinking and worrying and remembering, all this guilt or this anger about someone did something to me, the anxiety and the fear, oh, I'm going to handle this, this is going to be really difficult tomorrow. No, let all that go. So you can be really, really peaceful. As one of my other sayings is, so never plan, never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. I love that saying. Because you know, one of these days it's going to be true, you are going to die tonight. One day that's going to happen. And imagine it's the day you die, and you did all this work beforehand. You cleaned up the house, you mowed the lawn, and in the end you're not going to enjoy it. And you could have just enjoyed that last day instead of doing all this work. So assume that this is my last day. If this was your last day on earth, what would you do? And they say that's a spiritual practice, to live every day as if it was your last day on earth. And one day that will be true. So if this is your last day, would you be really worried about the economy, or about the football or the cricket or whatever else people worry about the stock market? Would you be really worried about that? This is your last day. It might be your last day. Who knows? But please don't die on this retreat, because it's a real pain in the neck. Pain in the neck for all the organisers and for me and everybody else. So please, you know, be compassionate. Don't be so selfish and die whenever you want to. So please be compassionate to the organisers. And don't die till the retreat's over. But what I'm saying there is that sometimes we worry about the future and we're neglecting the present moment where our future is being made. And if you can just remember that and get that in your head when you're meditating, meditation becomes so peaceful. All you've got to concern yourself with is what's happening now. There is no future. Instead of what should I do next, that thought, if that comes up, that's a red flag. What am I doing next? That's not the point. What am I doing now? That's the point, that's the question. You know, why did that happen? That's not the question, that's another red flag. It doesn't matter what happened, it's what's happening now. That is our focus of attention in the meditation. Now. And it finds you to be so free. You know, it is like you've been climbing up this mountain of treacle with heavy weights on your back. That's what life is like. It's such a struggle. You know, it's climbing up and through this really sticky stuff of life. You just manage to get up and you're so tired and you're struggling so hard. And I guess that's all the past and future you carry on your back. Just be right here, right now, and enjoy every moment of this meditation retreat. And then you finally just sit down, relax the body and be in this present moment, you'll get very peaceful and very happy. The first stages of meditation. Later on I'll talk about watching the breath and all these other types of meditations, but just start out by being kind to your body, kind to your mind. Letting go of the past, letting go of the future, and just being here. As I said in my latest book, when I travel around the world, going to many different countries, seeing many Buddhists, it's very rare for me to see a human being in today's world. All I ever see are human goings, hardly ever a human being. So are you going to be a human going somewhere during this retreat? Or are you going to return to being a human being? Just being here. Instead of going somewhere. The last little word of advice before we finish this introductory talk. Ajahn Chah, the great master, my teacher, he would always tell us, you're meditating to let go, not to get somewhere. Do you want to get somewhere in meditation? Are you trying to get into jhanas? Trying to be a soul one? Trying to get rid of all of your problems and anxieties? If you are, you're not meditating. Meditating is being here, not trying to get somewhere else. So don't try and get anywhere in meditation. Try to be here instead. And every place you wanted to get to, every attainment you read about in the books, you find when you don't chase them, but you are just here, they come to you. You just sit here and it happens. That is why I gave the simile, a meditation retreat is like going on a journey with Buddha air. You check in, you've already checked in. You know, put all your excess baggage, you know, in the hold, so you're not allowed to take it in the cabin with you. That you're not allowed to take all this baggage of past and future into your meditation. Unfortunately, you can't take such things on board the aircraft of Buddha Air. no past, no future, and there are security screens. If you take anything of the past or the future, beep, 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 you have to hand it in, and it's given to you after the retreat is finished. And you sit down in a nice, comfortable seat, and from that point on, once you take off, you do nothing. All you do is sit there on Buddha Air aircraft. And after a few minutes, just sitting there perfectly still, these beautiful flight attendants come up to you and say, "Madam, would you like first jhana? It's on the menu today." Say, "Okay, I'll have a bit of bliss today, thank you." And they just give it to you. And later on in the flight, they say, "Would you like Sowan, stream winning?" "Okay, that'll do." You don't need to ask for anything. Everything comes to you on Buddha Air. It's all part of the in-flight service. Or as they say in meditation, all part of the insight service. You don't go chasing it. It comes to you. So just be here. And all these great things which we talk about in meditation, just sit in here and they just come. You go chasing them and you chase them away. You be still and they arrive. So that's your job. Relax the body, relax the mind, let go of all past and future, just be here. Enjoy what it's like being a human being again. Not a human trying to get somewhere, go somewhere, attain something. We meditate to let go, not to try and get somewhere. So I know that's not much for the first talk, but that gives you the background, the basis. So now it's off you go. And just be here. So what are you supposed to do? Red flag. It's not what I'm supposed to do, it's what am I doing? That is the question.